If you're passionate about sports and looking for a thrill, you need to check out the freshly redesigned XBet. They're calling it the last sports book you'll ever join. I've been playing on XBet, and they really do have it all. Whether odds on basketball, combat sports, or even betting on the next Bitcoin dip. And the best part is, when you win, you get paid quick. But it's not just about placing bets. XBet is a whole experience. They support athletes and sports shows just like ours, and they give back to the community with tons of free bets and cash prize contests. Did I mention they also have a casino now? Spin the slots, play some roulette, or even try your luck at the live tables, all from a mobile platform that lets you enjoy the fun on the go. Whether you're super into sports betting or curious about trying it out, you need a site that makes it fun and easy. That's why you've got to check out XBet. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED and get a generous bonus of up to $1,000 on your first deposit. That's right, promo code TOOLSHED for free cash bonus to kickstart your journey. With so many great UFC cards on the horizon and the fact that baseball season is in full swing, there's never been a better time to play. Make your next bet, XBet.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 223 of the Tool Shed with Click and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross. With me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, you ready for some home runs and some draft talk tonight?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a fun one. 2 days done of the draft, 10 rounds, and the home run derby is live now as we are recording. So, yeah, really looking forward to that. Always a fun time. And the draft has been basically consumed me now for 2 days. So I'm a little, I won't say over it, but I'm tired of looking at my screen and writing. I wrote like 7,000 words on my top 50 FYPD last night and today, so I'm pretty drained.
Yeah, it's definitely a busy time of year, obviously, with the draft and all the All-Star festivities. But, again, obviously, you and I had the live stream over there on Bleacher Report app last night. That was a lot of fun, and did the winners and losers after that, but we're going to talk some more draft today while we get the Home Run Derby on. Real quick, who you got? Who you taking in the Home Run Derby?
It's hard to bet against Pete, man. He's so good. Like, you know, I mean, there's some fun names, but it's hard to, like, he just contends every year. And I don't know. I have a hard time betting against Pete Alonso. So we shall see. It's a fun group. I could see Vladdy giving it a run, but Pete's my pick.
Yeah, me too. I don't think I've bet against Pete yet. He's just a guy that's just built for the Derby. Like, he's just, this is his competition. Obviously, he's won a couple times. So I will go with Alonso as well. With the time you're listening to this, you'll already know who the winner is and if we are right with our Alonso prediction or not. Probably not, but who knows. But as I mentioned, we are going to go over the first round, plus a little bit extra of the MLB draft from yesterday. A lot of fun. Draft is still ongoing as we speak right now. We'll get into our initial top 10s for FYPDs. So picks we liked, we didn't like, some landing spots that were good or bad. Some of our favorite names outside of the first round. We'll have a lot of fun with it. But before we do, we'll get into the usual housekeeping here. You can find us on Twitter, Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at AirCross04, shows at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, Chris's Substack and my Patreon, for more work from each of us, including all of our Prospect Dynasty and FYPD rankings. I know Chris has put his updated ones out today. Mine will be up probably in the next couple of days as well. So a lot of good stuff on both of those platforms right now. But speaking of rankings, let's start with our initial top 10 rankings here, Chris. And this is one that I've had at the back end of my top 10. It's really been a difficult range for me to rank. I think the top six are pretty set for me, but I want to see how yours stack up in the back end too. So you want to go first? You want me to give mine first?
You can go ahead and do your top 10 and then we'll chat about them.
All right. So the top is basically 1A, 1B. I've gone back and forth. I've had each of these guys one. But right now, I will stick with Cruz at one for now, or 1A, and Wyatt Langford at 1B. I got Paul Skeens at three, obviously the number one overall pick to the Pittsburgh Pirates. 4-5, Walker Jenkins went to Minnesota. Pick 5, Max Clark to Detroit. And then 6 is Chase Davis, who went to St. Louis at pick 21. And then this is where I've had a lot of up and down in my rankings. As of now, I put Brock Wilkin at 7. That might be a bit high. Third baseman from Wake Forest, but I love the bat here. And then I go Jacob Gonzalez, 8. Matt Shaw, 9. And Arjun Namala, the prep shortstop that went to the Toronto Blue Jays at 10 overall. Who you got, Chris?
All right. So Dylan Cruz is number 1, followed by Wyatt Langford. I actually slotted them back-to-back in my overall prospect rankings as well. Just looking at the with everybody that's graduated and how it all plays out. It's like, okay, just kind of how they fit is back to back for me. Paul Skeens is my 3. I'd say in a points league, you probably bump Skeens up. Like, I wouldn't be against taking Skeens to the top pick.
Yeah.
If you're in a points league, this pretty pitcher heavy. Those are the clear cut top 3. I kind of think it opens up a bit after that. So I have Walker Jenkins going 4. I have Chase Davis in the 5th spot. Really big fan of that bat. I've already put in some of the international guys. So I had Yoshinobu Yamamoto. We'll skip him for now. So that would put Max Clark in the 6th spot there. So Max Clark is the 6th player off the board for my FYPD, followed by Walker Martin at 7. Fell a little bit further than I thought to the Giants at 52, but great, great pick there. I have Tommy Troy at 8, Matt Shaw at 9, and I have Aiden Miller in the 10th spot.
Aiden Miller at 10. Aiden Miller was my 11, by the way. And who was your 9? Oh, Matt Shaw right there.
Matt Shaw.
We both had Matt Shaw. So both of the same top 6, just flipping Clark and Davis. And then you had Shaw. I know we both had Shaw. And you had Aiden Miller, Troy, and Martin to my Wilkin, Gonzalez, and Arjun Namala. I'm surprised. Where's Arjun Namala for you? I know you're a big Namala guy.
Yeah, I had him right after Miller, so he comes in that next spot.
Okay, so
11.
Yeah, so we have Namala and Miller flip flop 10 and 11 there. So both good landing spots as well. Let's go right to where these guys, we won't give away exactly where they slot, but like a rough general range. You said you had Cruz and Langford back to back. And obviously, we were talking to, even before we came on the air, about all the names that recently graduated or will over the next few days or so following the All Star break, like Ellie De La Cruz is 4 at bats away from graduating. Yuri Perez just graduated, so there's 2 top 10 guys gone right there. So how high do you have this? Really, this the top tier. Obviously, top tier is the 2 bats plus Skeens. Where do you roughly slot them into your overall?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, Ellie will graduate on Friday after Friday's game, most likely. He needs 4 more at bats. So a big likelihood he graduates there. But as things currently stand, I still have LE1, obviously, until that actually happens. And then followed by Jackson Holiday, Jackson Churio, Junior Caminero. Here's where I got kind of interesting. I was like, I don't know where they fit, but I left James Wood at 5, Colton Cowser at 6 because he has debuted and he's up, and then I put Dylan Cruz in that 7 spot. So he was next, and I mentioned back-to-back him and Langford. So Langford slotted in at 8. I just believe in both those bats a lot, and I think they could be pretty similar. I think the fact they haven't debuted yet holds me back a little bit. You just look at, like, you know, thinking about Cruz or Caminero, like, Caminero is putting up better exit velocities with Wood than Cruz did with Metal this year. He just turned 20 like a week ago, and he's in Double A already. So, like, right now, I would argue that Junior Caminero is the superior prospect to Dylan Cruz until we see improved otherwise in professional ball. Not any knock against Dylan Cruz, just really how good Caminero's been. Cowser's in the majors. Woods got star upside, I think. So it was tough. That range, after that, after Langford at 8, like, I was like, okay, this is a comfortable spot, because I just wasn't enamored with really anybody after that enough to put them above Langford. So Cruz at 7, Langford at 8. By Friday, that'll obviously slot up one spot because Ellie will graduate.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of in that similar range with these guys. So my new top 10 right now, I'm going to take out Ellie right now. Let's just move him out of this conversation. I'm going Holidays at 1. Then you could really go a number of different ways here, from like 2 to 7 or 8 or so. I think it's a big tier. I got James Wood at 2, Caminero 3. I put Cruz at 4, which this is the highest I've ever gone with the FYPD guy, you know, initial inclusion in my overall following the draft. I know I've gone, you know, top 10-ish with Torque, with who am I forgetting that? With Drew Jones last year was pretty close. And I don't think I was even that high. Even the Mayer Lawler class, I think they were like maybe late teens, low 20s. So this is easily the highest I've ever gone with an FYPD guy. So Cruz at 4. I got Cowser at 5 now. Lawler 6. Churio 7. Langford at 8. So I'm right there with you with him being a top 10 guy right off the bat. It's very close to Dylan Cruz. Manzardo at 9. And Christian Encarnacion Strand at 10, though. Back and forth between him and Evan Carter and Jordan Westberg. It's pretty clear-cut top 12 for me. Then I have Paul Skeens top 20. You know, it's got to go over to him now. With Yuri graduating, with the, you know, with Bobby Miller graduating, Bryce Miller graduating, the uncertainty around the health of both Andrew Painter and Ricky Tiedemann, especially Andrew Painter right now. I mean, I think it's not, I hate to say it's easy to put Paul Skeens as the number one pitching prospect, but it kind of feels easy to put him as the number one pitching prospect. Are you in agreement there?
Yeah, I mean, a top tier of guys, like Painter is likely having Tommy John, as you said. Gavin Williams, he's the one that, like, I kind of consider, like, he was one that I struggled with of, do I put Skeens ahead of him? And ultimately I did. Maybe that's crazy. Gavin Williams is pitching the big leagues. He's performing. He's got really good stuff, but I just think Skeen's stuff is even better than what we've seen from Gavin Williams. So that was, for me, like, Skeen slotted in at 13 overall, and that's a couple spots ahead of the next pitcher, which is Painter and Williams in that tier. And I'm probably going to drop Painter a little bit further down, actually, because of the potential surgery. I mean, at this point, we kind of know that it's just the inevitable, sadly. So I'm not going to, like, tank his value completely, but, like, around 30 overall feels pretty fair at this point. But yeah. Gavin Williams debuted. Like, that's one reason I'm kind of like it. Like, you know, it's tough balance there.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I had Painter at 21 in my last update. He's currently 28. So, yeah, right in that same range with Gavin Williams, Ricky Tiedemann. But, yeah, I put Skeens. Right now I'm 18, so kind of tinkering with that. He's in a kind of similar range with, like, Adel Amador, Colt Keith, Marcelo Mayer. Well, so we'll see. You might move up a couple spots, but definitely feel good putting him top 20. With this, the upside he has, the, you know, proximity, he's probably going to be up pretty soon. Not this year, but, you know, maybe, you know, by end of next year, we could see Skeens up with Pittsburgh. So, yeah, felt pretty okay with doing that. And, yeah, like you mentioned, like, it's him. And then, like, I won't say he's in his own tier, but he leads that top tier of, you know, that kind of shaky with Tiedemann, with Painter. I have Williams in the top tier. Then it drops off because all the guys are kind of like in that next range where I've all graduated recently. So it's a good 20 or so spot drop down to, you know, guys like Emmett Sheehan, Andrew Abbott, AJ Smith-Shawver, Cade Horton, and then another pretty solid drop down to like the Tink Henses, Carson Wisenhunts, guys like that. Chase Hampton's in that tier for me too. So I'm sure you're probably even higher than that on Chase Hampton. But yeah, it's pitching prospects are kind of taking a hit now. So let's stick right with the pitching prospect talk here, because out of the 20, well, I don't know, technically for the first round, 28 picks, because the Mets and Dodgers didn't have a first round pick. They got moved back 10 slots each due to going over the luxury tax threshold this past year. Out of those 28 picks, there were only 5 pitching prospects taken total, which seems very, very light. I mean, this was a very, you know, hitter heavy draft, both prep and in the collegiate ranks, but did only 5 pitchers going surprise you? Like, I meant to mention too, when we were doing our live stream, when you were getting close to your Braves taking Waltrip, it was the 5th arm, because we had Skeens go 1 and then a little cluster in the back end of the top 10 with Rhett Lauder, with Chase Dolander, who we'll get to in a minute here, and Noble Meyer going 7, 9, and 10 respectively. Then there was a 14 pick gap to Atlanta taking Hurst and Waldrop, and then nothing else until, you know, in the picks in the 30s. So did that surprise you that only 5 arms were taken in this first round?
Yeah, to an extent. I think that there was obviously some deals going on, like with some of those guys, like in the comp round, in the second round. So like those things happen. I mean, you see like Arjun Amala fell, like just looking at the range of like the 10 to 20 range was kind of, you know, the big range for the college bats. So we saw a lot of college bats go in that range, and a lot of teams, that's where they wanted to go. So yeah, I mean, I would say it was a bit of a surprise that there was not more of them, but at the same time, like you saw, like we get to the comp round and then we saw Josh Noth go, Charlie Soto, Thomas White, Ty Floyd. So they all went in the 30s. And then in round 2, we started seeing more come off the board too, with Blake Walters, Sean, of course, the Rockies, Sean Sullivan, Grant Taylor. There were some interesting arms. And of course, the Mets drafted Brandon Sproat again. They drafted him last year and he didn't sign. So,
second time's a charm.
Yep. That was certainly interesting. And yeah, I was a bit surprised. Some of the top prep guys, it looks like they're going to school actually, which is kind of crazy. There were some really solid guys that I liked, especially like Cam Johnson out of IMG. Looks like he hasn't been drafted yet. I would guess that at this point he's heading to school, and several others. Zane Adams is one. Surprised we hadn't seen Tanner Witt go out of Texas. He's, I guess, in the injury history. Joey Volchko, I'm saying that right. He's another big prep arm that hadn't gone. So it's, I don't know. Like, it was weird to kind of see, because there's a lot of talent, in my opinion, that did not go. We'll see what happens. But yeah, a tangent to say, like, yes, I was surprised by only 5 going.
Well, I guess technically you could say 6 or 5.5 because of
Eldridge.
Because of Eldridge, who's a two-way player. The Giants took it pick 16 out of James Madison High School in Virginia. So I guess you could say 5.5 pitchers went in the first round there. But yeah, I was kind of thinking about that when there was that long stretch in the middle of the first round where I'm like, we haven't had a pitcher in a good while here. But sticking with the pitching talk here, obviously we had Skeens as the number 1 pitcher in this class, like by far. And then you have a cluster. You know, I think before the draft, I still had Dolander as my number 2 pitcher in this class for FYPD. Not anymore after he gets drafted 9th overall by the Colorado Rockies. Just, you know, some, as we were mentioning on the live stream last night on Bleacher Report, I mean, they needed to do that because they're not going to get anybody to sign there, or at least not anybody of note. So they needed to make that pick. But man, obviously the fantasy analyst in us, the prospect dynasty analyst and player in us, Chris, like, nobody had to like Chase Dolander going to the Rockies. And I think he actually was, I got him 9 or 10 in my rankings pre-draft. And then I dropped, just the same thing with Gabriel Hughes last year, who I think I had like in the 30s pre-draft, dropped into the 60s or something like that post-draft. It was a decent drop, not 30 spots for Dolander, but I moved him down like to that 2021, 22 range, and I'm still kind of tinkering with that kind of ranking. Obviously, I like the talent that Tolander brings to the table, but you know, it's Colorado. It's almost like the kiss of death for pitching prospects. So, kind of, what were your thoughts on Dolander landing there, and kind of where was he in your rankings, and where is he now?
Yeah, I had him 19 before the draft. He was kind of the back end of the second tier of arms. Just really like the prep arms a bit more.
Yeah,
honestly, I mean, he took a major step back this year. The slider was getting obliterated. I think the stuff's there, yeah, but there's certainly risk with Chase Dolander. And so I had my second tier of arms for FYPD was Noble Meyer, who's my second highest arm, Hurston Waldrop, Rhett Lauder, and Thomas White. And so those are like 14 to 18. I had Dolander like right after that, but I dropped him down to 26. And even that feels like I'm not going to touch him there. Like if he was at 26, like I probably still wouldn't draft him.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy to think about, but yeah, I'm pretty out on him ultimately, because that drop was just kind of brutal. Like the spot's just terrible.
Yeah. And I guess I had more faith in him than most after his down season. So I did still have him at number two, but not anymore. I mean, he's down to, he was already right in the same cluster with all those cans you just mentioned. I have him in the similar range as Thomas White. I do have White slightly ahead right now. But yeah, Meyer is now my number two overall. And then Waldrop, my number three. And Rhett Lauder, four. White, five. And Dolander, six. I probably should move down even more. Even you mentioning that you won't take him at 26. I won't take him at 22. I won't take him at 26 either. I mean, where would you take Dolander? I mean, obviously it probably won't happen given that, you know, a top 10 pick isn't going to fall too far in FYPDs, but throw a number out at me. Like, would you take him at, let's say 40? He's there on the board at 40. You take in Dolander.
I mean, I guess I'd take a shot, but again, it's like, yeah, by the time you get to the majors, like he's going to be in that park. Like he could pitch well in the minors and then look really good and get you excited, and then he's going to, I don't know. There's just nothing I trust or want anything to do with a Colorado pitcher for fantasy baseball, even a talent like Chase Dolander. I just can't get behind it. And so, like, I don't know. Like, I can't not rank him, obviously, but it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe around, like, 40 to 50, I guess. But I feel like they're either take a chance on, like, a prep bat or something that could take off. So,
yeah.
It just knowing the long-term implications is like, I don't want anything to do with a Colorado arm.
I mean, I think that's probably a similar range to where we were taking like a Sebastian Wolcott last year. Might as well take a shot on like an international guy or a prep bat or something. Yeah. It's, I don't know where I would even be comfortable taking him, because like, when's the last time there was any like Colorado pitching prospect that came up and actually did okay? Like, do you remember the last one that come up?
No.
I mean, the last arm I ever remember doing good at all was Ubaldo Jimenez, but they didn't develop Ubaldo Jimenez. They got him from Baltimore, if I recall correctly. Yeah. So he wasn't a player they developed. He had like that one dominant year and then completely fell off a cliff after that. But
yeah, I'm going to go back and look at their, because Pipeline does the top prospects all the way back to 2011. Tyler Matzik was actually their top prospect in 2011, the Braves left-handed reliever. Oh, that's quite interesting. Other arms in the top 10, Christian Friedrich, he never made it. Kyle Parker, who was a quarterback at Clemson for a while, he was a two-way guy.
I remember that name, yeah.
Yeah. Peter Tago, he was a right-handed pitcher. No idea. Chad Bettis, he is a reliever, right-handed reliever. And Juan Nicasio, you remember that name, eh?
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's a name I haven't thought about in a minute.
Yep. And in 2012, they had Drew Pomeranz, who I don't think he ever pitched in the majors with them. Could be totally.
I don't know. I know he pitched the majors with us here in Boston for a little bit, but I don't recall. I think he might have for a little bit, but if it was, it wasn't long.
Yep. They had Tyler Anderson, but I'm not sure. Anderson was not good, obviously. He had that one good year with the Dodgers last year, but he was never good there. I'm just going to go through and look for any relevant name at all.
I mean, eventually you're going to get the Riley Pint pretty quickly here.
Yep. Yep. David Dahl was their top prospect in 2013. He's actually in the Braves Oregon AAA. Eddie Butler, 2014, a relief pitching prospect. Okay, finally, we got one. John Gray. That was...
Oh, yeah, I forget they developed John Gray. All right, yep. I completely forgot about John Gray for some reason. Yeah, so okay, so they've developed one solid pitcher in the last, like, I don't know, the history of their franchise, dating back to... They were an early 90s team. They came in 93, I want to say. 93, something like that. So, yeah, it's been... But roughly what 30 years of the Rockies, they developed one. There's probably another one that people are like, oh, you forgot about so and so, but whatever.
Germán Márquez, but I mean, he's just kind of meh. So
they developed one decent guy and one meh guy.
Yeah,
that's what we're looking at. So the odds are not really in Dolander's favor, that's for sure. What about Rhett Lauder though? I mean, obviously when we talk about, you know, Colorado and Cincinnati, we give, you know, a decent boost on the hitting side of things when hitters go there. But on the pitching side, obviously we give there's more of a ding on Colorado because, you know, Cincinnati is just because it's the ballpark. Colorado's because of the environment, it makes it harder to pitch, et cetera, et cetera. So did you ding Lauder at all? I mean, we talked about how this is a great fit for Cincinnati in terms of this, like the real life value. They're, you know, looking to contend now, great young team. Getting a guy like Lauder who will be there pretty quickly as opposed to like a Noble Meyer, for instance, was a great, great real life pick. But did you not like that landing spot for a fantasy perspective with Lauder?
No, I mean, it's fine. Like, I'm not like digging him much. I know everybody's just kind of like Cincinnati. Obviously, it's not a good place to pitch by any means. And I 100% agree. Like, that's absolutely the case. But I will say that I think Rhett Lauder, when you look at the profile, he's an arm that I think can excel. He's not like a massive bat misser by any means, but it's the type of profile. It's a good pitchability. He throws so many strikes. Like, this is the kind of arm that I want. And he's not going to get blasted around like too hard, I don't think. He has a good enough fastball, really good changeup, and even the slider as well. So, like, I didn't ding him at all based on the landing spot. I actually... outside of the park, like, I like the landing spot ultimately because he's going to have a good lineup behind him for a really long time.
Yep.
And I think that benefits him. And even the defense, I think, could be good. Cincinnati's defense has been horrific the past few years, but I think they're finally getting there. So, yeah, I mean, he's not like a massive upside guy by any means, but he's just that pure pitcher with good stuff. There's a lot of strikes, lives in the zone. His fastball was up to 97 this year sometimes with good life. I mean, he sits 94-ish, but there's good stuff here. So I'm pretty in on Rhett Lauder. I think he's in the second tier, and I'd take chance on the upside arms over him, but I still like where he landed, and I think it's a good spot outside the ballpark.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, I wonder where if he goes... I don't think he's going to be a guy that I get a lot of shares of in FYPD just because, you know, obviously going pick 7, he's going to, you know, whether it's right or wrong, I mean, it's wrong, but, you know, the draft slot where these guys are actually taken, you know, factors in some people and where they get taken in FYPDs, even though it shouldn't, as I mentioned. Yeah. And as you mentioned, we both mentioned that many times over the years, dating back to probably even our first show, which was an FYPD, you know, almost 3 years ago now. But, you know, I have Lauder at, you know, in the teens. I am right now at 17. I think that's a fair range. I can see him moving up a little bit, down a little bit. But I feel like that 14 to 18 range is pretty fair for a guy like Rhett Lauder. He's a couple spots behind Waldrop, who is a couple spots behind Noble Meyer. Meyer's at 12 for me. Where do you have Lauder in your rankings?
He's slotted at 16.
Okay.
So right in that range. Yeah. I mean, he falls in that same tier with Meyer, Waldrop, and Thomas White. So it's a good group that I really like a lot.
Yeah. You know, Noble Meyer, I think one of us mentioned it, or maybe both. Like, the upside with Noble Meyer, you know, I talked about on the live stream yesterday on Bleacher Report. The upside with Meyer is massive. Like, I would be surprised. You know, obviously Skeens is the leader in the clubhouse, but I think there's like a non-zero chance that you could see Noble Meyer be the best pitcher in this draft class. I think there's definitely a chance of it. Obviously, I would take, if I bet money, it would be on Paul Skeens, but the upside is so massive with Noble Meyer out of Jesuit High School, same high school as Mick Abel. Kind of similar, you know, kind of bigger. He's actually even a little bit taller than Abel is by about an inch or two. It's kind of that tall, lanky, kind of loose frame, you know, big stuff, big secondaries as well. So, you know, I almost wanted to put him top 10. I came close to, I have him at 13 right now. Not to be 12 right now. Right in the same spot with Braden Taylor and Enrique Bradfield from Vanderbilt. But before we get into over to the more some more hitters here, let's go about Hurston Waldrip here. What are your thoughts about Waldrip, Chris? Going to obviously great landing spot with your Braves at pick 24, fifth or sixth pitcher taken in the draft overall. Obviously, the stuff is just massive stuff. Like arguably one of the, you know, top all around arsenals in the 2023 draft class, but the command and control has been an issue, which caused his fall to Atlanta at pick 24. I think his walk rate was a tick under 13% last year for Florida. Excuse me. What are your thoughts on Waldrip here long term?
Well, unbiasedly, I mean, I think that his splitter is one of the best pure pitches in the class. Just like from a just any pitch standpoint, it's extremely good pitch. You're talking about a fastball that is easily plus sitting 95, 96. He's touched 99 this year. It's got really good life, 14, 15 inches of induced vertical break there. So it's a good fastball. The splitter plays off of it well. Is it a low spinning and it just completely falls off the plate? I mean, we're talking 1200, like 11, 1200 RPM on the splitter, and like change splitters like you don't want spin on. Like that causes the ball to die and just like just drop out of the zone to cause hitters to struggle with it. So fastballs plus, I think the splitter change, the split change is 70. I think there's a true chance that we could look at the slider and the curve as plus pitches too. He flashes both being plus. It's a true 12-6 curve in the low 80s. And the slider is the true slider shape, a little bit of a sweeper action, but different velo bands for all of those pitches. So you have four different velocity bands you have to be sitting on, mid to upper 90s, high 80s, mid 80s, and low 80s. The arsenal's incredible. The command, control, I think that's got to really tick up. But again, the stuff is so good that I think that even if he lives in the 11% range, which is very high, like that's on the higher end and higher than I want, obviously, but I think he'll play. I think the stuff is some of the best in the class overall, like next to Skeens, like that kind of good. And ultimately, like this is an arm that the Braves, you know, should have taken a risk on because of the fact, like, I mean, why not? I mean, this is a potential ace. And you look, he could be a quick mover. Max Fried has a year and a half left on his contract, and who knows if they re-sign him or not. Waldrop could be ready by then and step into this rotation by 2025. So I like the pick a lot, Hurston Waldrop to the Braves. Like I said, nasty, nasty stuff.
Yeah, no doubt about that at all. I thought that was a great landing spot. Like I was lobbying for Boston to take him at pick 14 even. Thought he'd be, and I was hoping they'd go with an arm there. They went Kyle Teal, who I think was a good pick as well. We needed the catcher. Might not be the sexiest, you know, for FYPD purposes, but definitely a great real life pick there for my Boston Red Sox. But yeah, I wanted Waldrip there or I wanted Noble Meyer, but he didn't fall that far. But yeah, Waldrip can't deny the just immense stuff there. So it's a pretty exciting top kind of two tiers of pitching prospects here. Let's go over to some hitters. Here, there's a lot of intriguing hitters in like that 10 to 20 range where I think they'll fall into probably a lot of FYPD rankings as well, you know, and a lot of these guys are kind of, I think, be a little bit underrated because this is the tier of like, they're not the sexy names, but there's a lot of good value to be had in this range. I'm talking about names like, you know, Tommy Troy, Matt Shaw, you know, Jacob Gonzalez, Brock Wilkin, Enrique Bradfield, Braden Taylor, you know, and even, you know, Aiden Miller, guys like that. Who's like in that middle part of the first round, Chris? The guys are probably maybe slot 10 to 20 or so in your rankings. Who are a couple of guys that you're really going to be looking to target in FYPDs on the hitting side of things?
Well, Aiden Miller, obviously, I said he's in the top 10. He went 27 overall. So that like naturally is going to, you know, drop his stock a little in FYPDs. Like you said, people draft based on draft position more often than not, unless you're just like in a really super connected league. But I mean, Miller, one of the most decorated hitters in the class. I mean, highly athletic, very powerful frame, quick bat speed, good contact skills. I think he could be a really solid third baseman for the long term. We're looking at plus or better power, the contact skills above average, at least. I mean, he's not going to steal bases. It's kind of a profile that I really like. And I wrote in his write-up that it reminded me of Brady House with a little better feel to hit. So, like, that's pretty high praise if you know me, because I love Brady House. So that's kind of where I landed on Aiden Miller. And I think that he's just going to be a dude. I think he's the best hitting prospect in the Philly system right now, just instantly. So it's a fun pick. And I think you can get him affordably everywhere.
Yeah. I guess I have Miller 11, so I'm right there with you. I thought that was a pretty good landing spot there in Philadelphia. You know, what about a guy like, what about Jacob Gonzalez? Where does he fall in your rankings, Chris? I mean, I can see him going anywhere from like 6 or 7 all the way down to like, you know, early 20s. I think he's a kind of an odd prospect. Obviously, it's a hit first profile, or bat first, excuse me. You know, not a lot of defensive value to be had with Gonzalez, not a ton of speed either. So it's really hit and power need to be there for him to stand out. So where do you value him moving forward?
He landed at 13 for me.
Okay.
And like you said, I'm not like wild about it. It's fine. Like, he's probably somebody that I'm not targeting, but it just feels like that he has to land there for like just a kind of a safe bat, I guess I'd say. I'm coming into this year, like preseason, like he was pretty much a lock to be a top 5 draft pick. And he kind of fell off a bit, or I don't say fell off, but others kind of jumped him. We saw some power regression. The contact skills are good. I mean, he ran an 84% contact rate this year. I mean, struck out 10, 11% of the time. He walked more than he struck out. Like, it's a great bat to ball profile, but it's definitely a hit over power. And like, ultimately, like, I don't know what kind of power he gets to. Like, if he can be above average and he can hit 20 home runs, then yeah, it's semi-interesting, but he's, like you said, he's not going to steal bases. Like, he's not a runner at all. He gets 30 grade run times. He may have to slide over to third, which puts even more pressure on his bat.
Right.
And if that's the case, then I just want nothing to do with a third base Jacob Gonzalez, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of there with you. I mean, I did rank him 8. I'm feeling that's a bit high, kind of looking it over now, but he's not a guy I'm probably going to have a lot of shares of. I'd rather go after maybe one of the prep guys or get an arm in this range, or just a different collegiate bat. He's not one of them. I think he'll probably go, you know, FYPD, ADP, probably top 15 or so. But I don't think I'm going to end up with a lot of shares of Gonzalez. I got to reevaluate that ranking of him. I don't like it anymore now that I look at it more in depth. But what about a guy like Enrique Bradfield, Chris? Another kind of polarizing player. Obviously, you know, I think I moved him up a couple spots because of the landing spot with Baltimore. A great landing spot there, obviously. And that's kind of what they needed, getting that center fielder. Great, elite, elite defense, elite speed. The 80 grades on both of those, no doubt about it. Pretty solid hitter. Overall contact skills are good. Approach is good. But how much power does he bring to the table? That's the real X factor. I mean, we've seen these, you know, good hit tool, elite speed guys just not pan out. You know, that impact, at least some impact, is so important these days. Like, the Juan Pierre types of players are getting more sparse in baseball these days, or at least more sparse in the terms of like being an everyday starter, everyday impact player, and especially for fantasy purposes. So where do you value a guy like Bradfield? Because this is a guy that could be just that, even if he can get this, like, I don't know, 12 to 15 home runs, like, this is a guy that could be an absolute fantasy stud, like a guy that could, you know, be a top of the order guy, get on base at a high clip, score a ton of runs, steal a crap ton of bases. And if he can just add this double digit pop to go along with everything else he can bring to the table, he's going to be really exciting. But if he's the only guy that's going to give you, you know, 2, 3, 4 home runs, which I think is another possible outcome, you know, he gets a little less exciting. So where are you at on Bradfield?
I have him 23rd, just because I think that the lack of power is kind of concerning. I wrote in my write-up, though, there's projection in the frame So even if he can become a 15 home run bat, then he becomes an elite fantasy asset, because I do see him as a solid field hit. He had an average EV last year near 87 miles an hour, which is respectable, but that's with an aluminum bat. And you think that that probably takes a major step back with wood. So that probably translates to like 84 with wood. So that means it's not very good. So if somehow he taps into this projection and ultimately can hit 10 to 15 home runs, like I said, he's the only player in the class with 280 grades, and that's his glove and his runtime. So he's going to steal bases. He made really good contact last year, but the power just grades out like well below average to me. And that's really concerning. I mean, he's just the type that he's going to like hit a lot of ground balls and beat them out, or he's going to drop bunts and get infield hits. He's going to probably have like, he's going to be on base a lot. So there's still potential there. But at the end of the day, like, how valuable is that for fantasy if you're not having any power to speak of? So I don't know. He's a really weird one for me, probably more of an avoid unless he just happens to fall a decent bit, but I'd guess he's gone before my ranking of 23, but you never know.
Yeah. I think he's going to be probably in that top 15 range of FYPD ADP for maybe, I don't know. He's just such a polarizing name. Like I said, people could be enamored with the speed and solid hit tool and the hope that he could grow into more power, or they could see the current lack of power and kind of shy away. So I bet you he'll probably have one of the, in terms of the top like 25, 30 names, I bet you his like range of ADP, his min and max, is going to be probably one of the more stark differences in terms of some of the top guys here. But I mean, he's fun. I mean, absolutely fun. Like if that power comes along, like, you know, 15 homer, 40 steal guy. Now this 40 steals is like actually low for Bradfield and in today's stolen base environment. Like this guy could steal 50 plus bags easily, you know, if he gets on base enough, which he absolutely could. So yeah, definitely a very intriguing name for sure. All right, let's move over to some guys outside of the first round, Chris, that we are particularly high on in our FYPD rankings. Who's your first name?
All right, so both guys are kind of, I don't want to say like my guys, but guys that I've got pretty enamored on pretty early in research. And so the first is actually went to your Red Sox, and that is Zantello. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. Zantello, he's out of St. Louis, Missouri. He is just an incredible athlete, like outlier type athlete. He's got an excellent frame, and he shows good power already, like really good pop, good speed. Like, this is the kind of player that I want to dream on rather than take, like, if you're looking at one of the prep guys early, like Arjun Amala, like, rather just take a shot on Zantello, honestly. You're looking at easy plus run times right now. I mean, you're looking at a 6'2" frame, 200 pounds, very athletic, like middle infield type bat. I think the frame's still projectable with really good bat speed. He does everything so well. And, you know, he didn't get the love that many did. Has really good control of the zone, a very good contact ability, doesn't chase often. I don't know. I'm just like way in on this guy. I put him inside the top 30 for me, because I just believe in the power and speed profile here with Zantello. He's young. He just turned 18 in May. And ultimately, like, this is the kind of body that I want to bet on, because he's an outlier athlete. He's shown a good field to hit. He doesn't chase very often. And there's power and speed. So Nizan Zantello is one that I'm enamored with for FYPDs. And he's like ultimately like kind of an outlier where I think that I'm going to be drafting him everywhere. Like kind of like my Roman Anthony from last year.
I mean, I think you're becoming a closet Red Sox fan, Chris. maybe you're, you know, being your proximity to the lower levels of the Boston's aura kind of helps that a little bit. But there's a lot of shows lately where it's like, oh, let's pick a couple guys, whatever the reasoning is. But like, you've been picking this a lot of Red Sox when we do kind of segments like this lately. So, hey, it makes me feel great. Obviously, I love the pick as well here with Nizan. I don't know if it's Zantello. I want to try to figure that out. If anybody knows, let us know, obviously. I want to always want to try to pronounce these players' names correctly. But yeah, love that pick as well from my Boston Red Sox. My first one is going to be a guy that I am just shocked fell all the way to pick 80 to Arizona. You know, like they need another outfielder. But I think that, again, going back to what we were talking about earlier about how the draft pick can kind of influence where these players go a little bit in FYPDs, that Jack, I think Jack Harlow is going to be an absolute steal in FYPDs. He's a guy that I have top 20 in my FYPD rankings. Where do I have him exactly? Let me go back over to that spreadsheet. I currently have him. Where did he go? I have him 17 right now, kind of right in the middle of all those like Meyer and Waldrop and all of them that I mentioned. We mentioned a little while ago. So maybe that's a little bit high, but I like Jack Hurley coming off back-to-back really good years at Virginia Tech in 2022/375, 452, 664, 23 doubles, 14 home runs, and 10 steals in 58 games. This past year, 320, 414, 714. 17 home runs in 45 games. We're only still four bases there. I'm not sure why the stolen bases dipped a little bit there, but he's an above average or better runner. I think he's got above average power as well. Maybe he taps into a little more power. There's not like a ton of projection left on the frame. He's not a big guy either. He's like 6 foot, 185, 190, but very quick hands, can really drive the ball to all fields. And I love the swing. It's a beautiful swing as well. And at guy that shows a pretty good approach as well, solid contact skills, you know, and those really improved. That's kind of was the question mark around him. Is he like an above average hitter? Maybe not, but I think he can be around an average hit tool and maybe tick up to above average. I'm not putting that out of the realm possibility, but even this is average hit tool with, you know, above average or better raw power and similar speed, I think this is going to be a guy that's sneaky good and sneaky great value in FYPDs that I'm going to probably have a lot of shares of. So Jack Hurley is my first name here. Again, he went to pick 80 to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Who was your next name, Chris?
Yeah, I'll say that I was pretty shocked by that fall. There are some hit tool concerns, but I did put out a tweet and the data is really good on Hurley. And even though with hit tool concerns, still made contact like 75% of the time.
Yeah, it's solid year. Enough. Yeah.
I mean, you can live with that when you're hitting the ball as hard as he does. And he has good speed too. So I think he's going to be a sneaky FYPD guy. My next one is Walker Martin to the San Francisco Giants, who did fall a little bit. The Giants scooped him up. The more like I've just been digging in, the more I just like these kind of like outlier athlete types. And that's Walker Martin. Martin was his high school team's quarterback. He led them to three straight state championships. He was on the basketball team up until this year. So his junior year, he actually led the team in points and rebounds. This kid's an athlete. He's a great athlete at that. I thought that he is one of the top, and I told I had him in my top 10 for FYPD because it's a really projectable frame at 6'2", 185, just muscular, very strong, good speed. Got a really good feel for the barrel. I love some Walker Martin. He's a good runner as well. People that have, I haven't seen him live, but the scouts that have seen him really talk about the line drive gap to gap power. And thinking about the fact that he could develop into more power. This kid's played three sports his whole life. He's a stud football player. And now he's finally going to focus on baseball. I think Walker Martin's just going to absolutely break out and be a special talent. He hit 20 home runs this year in high school season, hit 636. Getting a little tongue twisted there. 636 batting average, 20 home runs. He fell because he's 19. He's one of the older ones for his class from the prep standpoint. But you know what? Like, honestly, like, I could care less. Like, if you're 17, if you're 19, to me, it doesn't really matter. Like, if you're a great athlete, you're a great athlete. The age doesn't really change that for me. If he moves off a shortstop, don't really care. I just really believe this bat's going to play. And the Giants got an awesome, awesome pick here in Walker Martin. So I'm really, really in there on him. So he's one that I think that's probably going to be a bit underrated. Maybe I'm overrating him some, but no. After last year, like I was like, I believed in guys that I didn't put up boards. And I was like, I really believe in Martin. So I'm just going to put him top 10 because I just absolutely believe in him. So that's what I did. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have him Lord, I have. I have him right around the screen. I have him at 25 right now. So, yeah, I'm obviously not top 10 on him like you are, but I like Malcolm Martin a good amount as well. And maybe I'm even too low on him, as I agree with a lot of you, just what you just said there. And yeah, I'm with you too on the, you know, yeah, he might be a little old for, you know, a high school player in this draft, but people make it seem like he's, what's that gif I'm trying to think of? Or that, or obviously it was a show. I forget what show, but oh, it was a Steve Buscemi when he's walking in with the, in the high school with the skateboard. He's like, yeah, how do you do, fellow kids, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
They act like he's like Steve Buscemi for yeah. You know, I don't want to swear here, but, but yeah, it's like, oh my, I think Jordan Lawler was, he was a little old.
Yeah.
Kind of in his draft class a couple years ago. So it's not that big of a deal. Like if it was a, you know, you're drafting that 24-year-old college bet, okay, maybe you can go there, but you still guys that are still a few years away, regardless, in the major leagues with plenty of developmental time left. So yeah, I don't hold that against them whatsoever. I'm actually doing a last second change here. I was going to talk about Travis Honeyman, outfielder from Boston College, who I do like a good amount. I think he's a great FYPD target, but I'm going to switch gears. I should go with Colton Ledbetter from Mississippi State. First 2 years were at Samford, and then he was transferred over to Mississippi State for that last year. And there's some questions. How would he transfer over to, you know, into the SEC? But he performed just as well, maybe even better than he did at Samford. So last 320, 452, 574 with 12 doubles, 12 home runs, 17 steals, only caught once, and more walks than strikeouts, 47 walks, 236 strikeouts in those 53 games. So answered the questions of, you know, how could he transfer over? How could he handle the big SEC? And he's a guy that doesn't have a lot of standout tools. And I hate to use this comp because I think it's kind of lazy, but it works though. It's like this, well, not this year, but previously the small school guy, you know, with, you know, not a huge standout tool, kind of like a slightly less exciting Colton Cowser type of player. I think there's, you know, an above average hit tool here. I think there's at least average power and speed. You could maybe even tick those slightly above average. So again, not a guy that's got to stand out. Doesn't have that any, you know, doesn't wow you in any one area, but keeps the strikeouts in check, gets on base, you know, could be a guy that could flirt with 20-20 down the road with a decent average and OBP as well. And he fell, where'd he go in the draft? He was picked 55 to Tampa Bay. So getting him into a good system as well, like that landing spot. So I will be getting a lot of Colton Ledbetter in my FYPDs. Right now I have him in 27 in my FYPD ranking. So a guy that I like a good amount there. So Colton Ledbetter. So again, to recap our the last four names here, I went with Colton Ledbetter and Jack Hurley. Chris went with Walker Martin and Nizan Zanatella. So mark those guys down for your FYPD, you know, kind of sleepers or, you know, mid-round targets, wherever you want to call them. So a lot of good names in this draft. And this is just our first of probably several draft shows. We'll have a mock draft at some point and more breakdowns in the offseason. So this was just like our initial kind of thoughts, initial rankings. And obviously we will go deeper and deeper into this draft over the coming months and into the offseason. But that is going to wrap us up. Again, check out both of our FYPD rankings over on our personal platforms. Chris's Substack, the Dynasty Dugout, and my Patreon, Toolshed Fantasy, along with all of our other rankings, daily content, Chris's Dynasty Trade Calculator. I highly recommend you go check that out as well. I know he put a crap ton of work. I think it's the second time I've used the words crap ton in this episode, but it fits. He put a crap ton of work into that. So go check that out as well. And thanks to all the listeners for tuning in again. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will see you all next time. But until then, everyone take care.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.